Tammy and I were driving through Medford with Benjamin and Mary in the back seat. Benjamin is in kindergarten, Mary's in first grade, and they were chattering and laughing and teasing, and so I decided to add a little bit of sophistication into that situation. I took out a tape from my console and popped it in. It was a tape of Beethoven. And I couldn't believe what I heard from the back seat. Mary and Ben were going, "Hey, we know that song. We know that song." I said, "You do?" I was amazed. "Yeah, we know that song. It's the Looney Tunes song. It's the Looney Tunes song." It was Beethoven's Midnight Sonata, but I guess Looney Tunes has picked it up. And I said, "Oh, come on, guys. That's not the Looney Tunes song. That's Beethoven. He wrote it." And Benny said, "Wow, a dog wrote that song?" At that point, I knew I was barking up the wrong tree. Now, every one of us that's in this sanctuary who is parenting, we want our children to do well. We want them to do well. And if you're not a parent, every person in this congregation wants the people that we care about to excel. Every one of us wants those we're parenting to do well, or those who we care about truly to excel. How does that happen? By popping in a tape of Beethoven? Or, for that matter, by popping in a tape of a Bible sermon? Is that the way that our kids are going to do well? Or people that we care about, is that the way they're going to excel? Now, Beethoven may be beneficial. And a Bible sermon tape certainly can be helpful. But there's something much more basic, foundational, and profoundly simple that you and I can do to help people that we care about or folks that we're linked to do well and truly excel. Much more important than a Beethoven tape or a Bible study for that matter. You see, Paul cared greatly about his spiritual children there at Corinth. They were his offspring. He had led them to the Lord, and he cared about them that they might do well in the Lord. And so, in our text, here in 1 Corinthians 11, he says something which shows the most essential, important way to help people. He says in our text to his kids at Corinth, to his spiritual offspring, to those he cares about in that city, he says in chapter 11, verse 1, "Be ye followers of me, even as I also am of Christ." He doesn't say, "Listen to me." Or he doesn't even say, "Dialogue with me." But rather, Paul says to his children, "Look at me and follow after me. Even as I follow Christ, so you too follow after me." Amazing. For you see, our tendency, understandably, is to say, "Hey, don't look at me. I'm just human. I lack maturity. I still am struggling. Don't look at me, but listen to me, son, or neighbor, or friend. listen to me, or share with me, let's work out this problem together, you see. Paul, however, though, said, no. He said, look at me. Be ye followers of me. I believe, mom and dad, grandpops, grandma, I believe you who were on the campus at SOC or at North or South or Cascade or wherever you might be, I believe that the most important thing that you can do to help people do well and to help people excel is not preaching at them or sharing with them or doing something for them. But the most important thing is this, for you to be the man, the woman, the teenager that you're supposed to be. More than anything you say, or anything you do, or anything you share, it's who you are that will ultimately make the greatest impact upon the people that you care about or are linked to. It's who you are personally, privately, consistently. Who you are secretly, that will singularly have the greatest impact on your kids, on your friends, on your mom and dad, whoever it might be that you're concerned about and want to see succeed, you see. Be ye followers of me. Do what I do. Paul was saying to the Corinthian kids, the Corinthian congregation. Now, why? Why is who I am more important than what I say or what I share or what I preach or what I give or what I do? Why is that? Two reasons I want you to jot down perhaps or think through. Number one, if I am the man that I'm supposed to be, personally, privately, secretly, consistently, it will be a practical example for those around me. It will be a practical example for those around me. We need practical examples. Be ye followers of me, Paul said. Why? Because he was a man who walked the talk. And he would be able to say, hey, what I am, you be. A practical example, you see. Now, listen or turn with me to what this same Paul tells a young preacher who was feeling inadequate, who was feeling intimidated, who was feeling unsure of his effectiveness in ministry. Turn with me to 1 Timothy chapter 4, or at least listen carefully. Paul tells Timothy this in chapter 4, verse 12. He says, Timothy, who was feeling young, inexperienced, unsure, Timothy, verse 12, chapter 4, let no man despise your youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. Be an example, Timothy. You might be unsure of your abilities to preach, of your maturity in the things of practical service, but this you can be, Timothy. This is most essential. Be thou an example of the believers. Let me ask you this. Are you an example of what a believer should be. Practically. To your kids. Or your school buddies. Or your parents. You might say, well, I'm young. Hey, let no man despise your youth. Well, I haven't been a Christian that long. Big deal. Let no man despise your youth. Be thou an example. So I ask you this question. Even as we talk about our church family, if everybody was just like you, what would this church be like today? If everybody studied the scriptures just as consistently as you do, and was just as committed as you are to studying the scriptures, would we cancel Wednesday night? Or would we have to add on another evening or two or three? If everybody was just exactly like you, you see. How many prayer retreats would be canceled if everybody prayed just like you pray? Would we still be meeting in the park at Cantrell Buckley if everybody gave just like you give? Would we even have this sanctuary? Would we even enjoy these facilities if indeed everybody gave just like you give? Everybody prayed just like you do. Everybody studied with the same consistency that you study. What would Applegate Fellowship be like? Really, don't think about the person sitting behind you or next to you, or especially the guy that's not here this morning. Just you. What if everybody was just like you? What kind of an example are you to our church family? Honestly. Or to your family personally. What if your kids were just like you? How many movies would they be secretly sneaking to? Where would their money go when no one's watching? What would their priorities be if they were just like me? How we need practical examples. Truth that's incarnational. What does that mean? It means in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. John 1:1. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. What does that mean? The Word became flesh. And He dwelt among us. That is Jesus. He lived among us. The Word was fleshed out practically, worked out tangibly in the example of Jesus Christ, you see. Is the Word being fleshed out in you, worked out through you, in a practical kind of way? Or are people at home or on your campus or in this congregation confused because it's just sort of fuzzy what a believer is to be as they look at you, as they look at me? True story, a guy moved in next door to a TV repairman. So when it came time for him to put up his antenna, he went up on the roof and he looked at his neighbor who was this TV fellow. He saw that his neighbor's antenna had an arm on the antenna that was just flopped down. And the antenna was turned in a southerly direction. And so he went up and said, well, man, my neighbor, he's a TV repairman. He must know what he's doing. So he broke his antenna, turned it in the same direction. went downstairs and punched on the TV and it was just fuzzy. Reception was terrible. So he went next door to his neighbor and said, I'm having problems with my TV. Just put my antenna up and did it just like yours. The repairman said, man, my TV hasn't worked in years. I wonder if people aren't getting the wrong picture sometimes from some of us. I wonder what is coming in on the screens of their minds when they view you and view me. You see, more than anything that I can preach at Peter, John, or Christy, or Benjamin, or Jesse, or Mary, much more important than any preaching I do or teaching I share is who I am personally, secretly, privately. For you see, those things will be worked out of my life practically, daily, visibly. My own dad taught me lessons on integrity that I'll never forget. See, my dad was, at that time, when I was a little guy, vice president of a big bank in San Jose, California. And they gave him a company car, but at that time, in that bank, the company car was to be technically used for nothing but company business. Now, my best buddy down the street on Bent Lane, his dad was also vice president of a bank. Actually, it was a savings and loan. And he also had a company car. But he took that company car everywhere. And I watched my best buddy and his dad cruise around in this fancy company car, going to games and doing errands and whatever. I mean, it was technically at that time against the rules, but everybody was doing it. Everybody, except my father. Come on, Dad, let's get in the new Fairlane. Come on, Pops, you're taking me to school today. Can we go in the Fairlane? No, we're going in the Plymouth. Oh, Dad, let's take the Fairlane. It was a sharp car. Nope. It's only to be used for company business. Now, he was vice president. But he wouldn't ever use the company car for personal matters. Bugged me. But as I got older, I've thought on that frequently. It was a most important teaching. He never sat down with me and said, son, today we're going to talk on integrity. In fact, I don't even remember him ever even using that word, much less giving a Bible study on integrity. He just did it. The word became flesh and dwelt among us. Without ever intending to, perhaps, or even thinking about it that much, he was a living teaching for me on many issues, including that one. Just being an example, you see. Mom, Dad, listen. You can have family devotions and you can preach at your children, but it's what they see in you, personally, secretly, privately, that is going to make a lasting impression upon them. Paul says to the Corinthian children, be followers of me, even as I follow Christ, you see. So, number one, for you who take notes and keep track of these things, being an example is a practical example for others. It's a practical example for others. That is, if I am being what I should be, it's a practical example for others, you see. Secondly, and this intrigues me, it's not only a practical example for others, but it makes a powerful impact upon others in a mysterious, mystical, miraculous way. You see, what you are, even if no one sees it, what you do, even though others might notice it, might not ever notice it, pardon me, will directly affect the people around you. You say, oh, Junior, or if you're a teenager, my mother or my buddy or whoever, they don't know whether I have family devotions or personal times or whatever it might be. They don't know what I'm doing out of their eyesight. Listen, I believe firmly that what you're doing out of their eyesight, in the privacy of your own walk, will directly impact what they do in their walks. Come on, John, how does that work? What do you mean? Turn with me, please, to the book of 2 Samuel, would you? 2 Samuel chapter 21, Old Testament, page 429. Check this out. Check this out. Verse 15. The Philistines had war again with Israel. And David went down, and his servants with him, and fought against the Philistines, and David waxed faint. He got pooped. David and his men war against the Philistines, and David's feeling fatigued. He's pooped out. He's getting older, you see. At that time, verse 16, 2 Samuel 21, Ish-bi-benob. For any of you pregnant ladies, there's a possible name. Ish-bi-benob. Not really. He was one of the sons of the giant. Which giant? Probably Goliath. Well, he was one of the sons of the giant. And he was girded, verse 16 tells us, with a new sword. And he saw David waxing faint and thought, ha ha, I'm going to do him in. But, verse 17, Abishai succored him and smote the Philistine and killed him. One of David's men, Abishai, came and helped David out and did that giant in. Then, verse 17, the men of David swore unto him, saying, thou shalt go no more out with us to battle, that thou quench not the light of Israel. Hey, Dave, you're our light. You're our star. Go home. You're getting older. Let us take on these boys. Let us fight the Philistines. Come on, Dave. And so it came to pass after this, verse 18. There was again a battle with the Philistines at Gob. Then Sibbecai, he slew Saph, which was also a son of the giant. And after him, we read Jairoregam, verse 19, slew the brother of Goliath, the staff of whose spear was like a big beam. So this guy, Jairogori, whatever his name is, he took on the brother of Goliath, you see, and did him in. There was still, verse 20, another battle in Gath. This man was of great stature. He was a giant giant. And on every hand he had six fingers, and on every foot six toes. Big fella. Six fingers, six toes. He was their main guy. Six toes. He was poison to the people of Israel, from which we get ptomaine poisoning. He was a guy... That was really bad. I'm sorry. But he was the guy who stalked up and down the valley, man. Six fingers and six toes. He was a giant headache, a giant problem. And what happens? It says here, he was also, verse 20, last phrase, born to the giant. And he defied Israel, and Jonathan, the son of Shammah, the brother of David, slew him. Now, these four were born to the giant in Gath. They fell by the hand of David and by the hand of his servants. Intriguing. These guys, these giants, the sons of Goliath, the brother of Goliath, they're fallen like flies. It says here, by the hand of David and by his servants. Wait a minute, David didn't kill them. The Hebrew text is most clear on this matter. David didn't kill these giants that are mentioned here, or did he? What do you mean? They were slain by the hand of David and by his servants. Think with me. Understand this. These men that are mentioned here who took on those giants were part of a group known as David's Mighty Men. Who were these guys? Well, initially, they were 600 ragtag renegades. Why, we are told in an earlier chapter, they were men who initially were distressed, in debt, and discontent. Any of you guys relate to that? I'm distressed, I'm in debt, I'm discontent. And they heard about David, who at that time was a young man, and they began to hang out with David. This was before David was king. In fact, Saul, the king at that time, was chasing him, trying to do him in. But these ragtag renegades, they started running with David. And an interesting thing happened. As these losers began hanging around David, they were transformed and became winners. They became mighty men. Just like you. Just like me. People who were in debt, discontent, distressed previously, as we hang around the Son of David, Jesus Christ, something begins to happen slowly but surely. We're changed, as Paul says, from glory to greater glory. Great mystery. And these guys became mighty specifically in killing giants. Why? Because they hung around a giant killer. But here's the deal. Listen, don't miss this. They never saw David actually kill Goliath. That was done out of their eyesight. They weren't around at that time. But what David did privately, personally, secretly, if you would, at least out of their eyesight, what David did personally, privately, secretly, previously, had a direct effect on the men that were linked to him, and they became giant killers too. You see, I don't know that David ever gave a sermon on killing giants. Here's a 10-point sermon on how to kill a giant. I don't know that he ever gave instruction about dealing with the brothers and sons of Gath, of Goliath. He just was. David just was a giant killer. And so, the men that were around him, they too became killers of giants. Mysteriously, miraculously, mystically, what David was privately, personally, secretly, these men became, you see, years later. Contrast that with Saul. You know what?
Saul also had a group of men around him, and not one killed a giant. Saul's catalog of men that were around him, not one is mentioned as being a giant killer. David had many, even more than in this section, who are noted in the scriptures as being giant killers. But Saul? Zero. Zippo. Nada. No one killed a giant. Why? Because Saul didn't. He personally was not a giant killer. So neither were the men around him. If you would, his family. What does this tell me? If I want Peter John to be a man of prayer, if I want Benjamin to be a student of the scriptures, if I want Mary Elizabeth to be a lover of God, the most important thing I can do is for me to pray secretly, privately, consistently. For me to study the Word privately, regularly, daily. For me to love the Lord privately, intensely, sincerely. What I am in secret, who I am truly, will somehow have an effect on the mighty men around me. My kids, my friends, whoever it might be. You see, you can preach at your kids. You can come down on your kids. But mom and dad, if you're not who you should be privately, it's not going to impact the kids in the way that you wished it would. It's who you are more than any other single factor. What movies do you sneak out to see when Junior doesn't know what you're watching? How do you spend your time? What priorities do you have? Do you think, well, because no one is seeing, this will not adversely affect my family, even though I know it's inconsistent with what I'm called to be? What I am and what you are, personally, secretly, will have a powerful impact upon others that are around me. Now, a couple of things and then we're done. Paul again saying, be ye followers of me, even as I follow Christ. What does this do? When I understand the principle, if I am who I should be, it will be a practical example for others, and it will leave a powerful impact upon others. A practical example for others, number one, a powerful impact upon others, number two. Somehow, who I am is transferred to those who are around me to a certain degree. We see that in John chapter 4, don't we? The Pharisees and scribes and Sadducees were amazed at the boldness, at the profound wisdom of what they called ignorant and unlearned fishermen, Peter and John. And it says, but they took knowledge of Peter and John that what? They had been with Jesus. You see, out of the sight of the Pharisees, away from the observation of the Sadducees, Peter and John were with Jesus. And it made all the difference in their ministry. So for you, mom, for you, teenager, for you, brother, sister, if you have been with Jesus, those that are around you, even those that are coming down on you or rebelling against you, will take knowledge of you. Something's different about him or her, and it will be an example for them. It will leave an impact upon them. It's powerful. Be what you're supposed to be. What does this do? Two things, then we're done, truly. Number one,
it liberates me.
You see, I can't do a lot of things. I have all kinds of flaws and shortcomings in my personhood. But you know what I can do? I can walk with God. I can love the Lord. I can give myself in prayer. And so can you. You might not be a singer of solos. You might not be a fixer of car engines. You might not be a carpenter or a mathematician. Lots of stuff you might not be able to do. But this you can. I don't care who you are, you can love God. So can I. You can pray. Me too. You can worship. Every one of us, without exception, you see. The preacher goes into his new church. He was following sort of a legend who had retired from the ministry. This guy was loved and been there for 40 some odd years. And as the preacher came up to the platform on that first Sunday for his first sermon, he noticed that in this massive stained glass behind him, there was a little piece of the stained glass missing from the corner. And somebody put in some cardboard temporarily in that little missing corner, you see. Preacher gets up there and says, "Folks, I'm a lot like that cardboard. I'm not part of the big picture here, but I'm better than nothing." And the congregation sort of chuckled, and he gave his sermon. Afterwards, one of the old congregants came and said, "Oh, Pastor, I want you to know that after that sermon, we consider you a real pain." And you can be a real pain, P-A-N-E. That's not right. However you spell it, you can be it. How? You can be part of the big picture. You might not be huge in history or part of some big kind of ministry, but you can be impacting to your friends and your family, to your colleagues at work or on the campus where you attend school, you see. How? By just being what you're supposed to be personally. I can do that. I might feel cardboardy, but this I can do. I can love the Lord. I can walk with Him morning by morning. I can give my life to Him wholeheartedly. You can too. And what a difference that makes. I think of Benjamin Franklin. The guy was incredible. And he was not only a politician and an innovator and an inventor, but he was an instigator of civil projects. That is, he got Philadelphia to start a public library, first library in America, and a fire department, and all kinds of stuff. Towards the end of his days, he wanted Philadelphia to be lit with street lamps. Problem was, the people of Philadelphia were getting sort of weary of all Ben Franklin's pushes for civic projects. So he tells us that what he did was, knowing that he couldn't go before the city again, not feeling comfortable in that way, he just bought a real nice street light and hung it in front of his house and lit it every evening. After a few weeks, his neighbor next door said, "Where did you get that? Looks pretty nice." And so his next door neighbor got one too. A few days later, the third house down the street also wanted one. And then a fourth house. And pretty soon the whole street was lit up. And in 10 years, the entire city of Philadelphia was lit with street lamps without Benjamin Franklin ever saying a word. He just lit his own lamp. People saw the light. They got the picture.
You can do that, mom, dad, sister, brother. You can do that. Just be what you're supposed to be. Let it be an example. And it will leave an impact upon those around you without you saying a word. It liberates me. I can do that. Yeah, Lord, I can just walk with you and let you ignite this light. I can do that. And let the neighbors do what they may. My children be blessed along the way. It not only liberates me, but secondly, it motivates me to do what? To do what Paul says, take heed how ye walk. Oh Lord, is it true that my family, Benjamin, Christy, Peter, John, Mary, Jesse Lee, that what I do secretly, personally, privately, is going to have a direct effect on what they do and the way they walk and who they become? I can't help but think of that story. It was a snowy Thanksgiving morning there in Chicago, and a guy who was a Christian, loved the Lord, felt as though he was just sort of at liberty to drink, and he went to his liquor cabinet to pour himself a Thanksgiving drink. Oh, bummer. There was no liquor in the cabinet that day. So he put on his coat and his scarf and his hat and his galoshes, opened his front door and made his way down the street through the freshly fallen snow to a liquor store that was about a block away. After a couple of hundred yards, as he was about halfway there, he sensed something behind him, and he turned around, and sure enough, he saw his little 7-year-old son, also dressed in coat and galoshes and hat. And he said, "Son, what are you doing?" As his son was walking behind him. "Oh, Dad," he says, "I'm just here in the snow, I'm just walking in your footsteps, Daddy. That's what I'm doing. I'm walking in your footsteps." And this man said, talk about conviction. My boy, unbeknownst to me, was walking in my footsteps to the liquor store. Is that really what I want him to do and to be? How this motivates me to take heed how I walk. You mean what I do privately, secretly, away from Peter, John, and Christy, away from my Applegate family, is going to affect my kids and my grandkids directly? Yeah. You mean if I pray in secret and witness, even though they're not there, and love you with all my heart, that it's going to impact them? Yeah. But if I make my way to the liquor store and worldly spots, that's also going to be an influence upon them? Could well be. Lord, oh, help me to take heed how I walk. I care too much for my 5 kids. I don't want to see them mess up. Give me wisdom, Lord. Hey, the best thing that you can ever do for this church, your kids, the buddies at school, your girlfriend, whatever situation you find yourself in, the best thing you can do for people you care about is be the man or the woman that you're supposed to be privately, secretly, consistently, and you will find that you will then, like Paul, be able to say, follow me as I follow Christ. It will be an example, a practical example for others, and it will have a powerful effect upon others. May God help you and set you and me free from the pressures, from all the stuff we place upon ourselves. And may we be free to just be what we're supposed to be and see how it affects this congregation,
this community, our own personal families. In Jesus' name. Let's stand, shall we? Can you turn to that person that you're sitting next to? Don't, but could you? And say, hey, follow me as I follow Christ. Do just what I do. Watch me if you want to know how to walk. By being here today, this morning, we've taken a step in the right direction. Bunch of people are sleeping in today, going out to the lake, fishing, whatever. I'm not against fishing or going to the lake, but I commend you for today choosing to say, I'm going to walk with the Lord. I see college students back here. You know, I happen to know some of these kids. Their parents aren't even home. They don't have to be here today. No one will ever know, but here they are. I commend you. I see people here today who I know could be out making an extra buck or two, an extra sale, but you're not. I commend you. I see people who have been here week after week, month after year, just studying through the Scriptures, giving their life in worship and offering themselves in intercessory prayer, and I commend you. You are walking in the Lord so very many, many. Keep doing it. Satan will say, but you're not preaching. You're not singing. You're not going to Africa as a missionary. Hey, but this you are doing. I'm walking with the Lord. Not perfectly yet, but I'm walking with Him. And because you are, know this. It's going to have an impact upon Junior, upon your buddies, upon this community. Continue to walk. Continue to order your life in such a way that you too can say, follow me as I follow Christ. In Jesus' name I pray.